Kevat, O Kevad Sutta. This discourse appear in Long Length Sayings, Digha Nikaya. This is the 11th discourse. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying at Nalanda in Pavarika's mango grove. Then Kevata, the householder, approached the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, Lord, this Nalanda is powerful, both prosperous and populous, filled with people who have faith in the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One were to direct a monk to display a miracle of psychic power from his superior human state so that Nalanda would to an even greater extent have faith in the Blessed One. When this was said, the Blessed One said to Kevata, the householder, Kevata, I don't teach the monks in this way. Come monks, display a miracle of psychic power to the lay people clad in white. And for the second time and the third time, Kevata, the householder, said to the Blessed One, I won't argue with the Blessed One, but I'll tell you, Lord, this Nalanda is powerful, both prosperous and populous, filled with people who have faith in the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One were to direct a monk to display a miracle of psychic power from his superior human state, so that Nalanda would to an even greater extent have faith in the Blessed One. The third time, Blessed One said to the Kevata that he is not instructing, he is not doing teach the Dhamma in that way. Kevata, there are these three miracles that I have declared, having directly known and realized them for myself. Which three? The miracle of psychic power, the miracle of telepathy, and the miracle of instructions. So, Iddipatiharyam, Adesanapatiharyam, Anusasanapatiharyam. The miracle of psychic power is this Iddipatiharyam. And what is the miracle of psychic power? There is the case where a monk wields manifold psychic powers. Having been one, he becomes many. Having been many, he becomes one. He appears, he vanishes. He goes unimpeded through walls, ramparts, and mountains as if through space. He dives in and out of earth as if it were water. He walks on water without sinking as if it were dry land. Sitting cross-legged, he flies through the air like a winged bird. With his hand, he touches and strokes even the sun and moon, so mighty, the powerful. He exercises influences with his body even as far as the Brahma world. So when we say, when Buddha said that someone can stroke even the sun and moon, it's the mind-made body that one can actually go and touch, and it does not affect by any of these things. So if someone wants to go through walls, that those who have developed this space is infinite consciousness level, then they approach a wall or whatever object and they say, let there be space. So there will be space and they go through that one. So that sort of technique. So then someone who has faith and conviction in him sees him wielding manifold psychic powers, exercising influence with his body even as far as the Brahma world. He reports this to someone who has no faith and no conviction, telling him, isn't it awesome? Isn't it astounding? How great the power, how great the powers of contemplative. Just now I saw him wielding manifold psychic powers, exercising influence with his body even far as the Brahma worlds. Then the person without faith, without conviction, would say to the person with faith and with conviction, sir, there is a charm called Gandhari charm, by which the monk wield manifold psychic powers, exercising influence with his body even as far as the Brahma world. So there has been something called charm, Gandhari charm in the past that can do those things. What do you think, Kevata? Isn't that what the man without faith, without conviction would say to the man with faith and with conviction? Yes, Lord, that is just what he would say. Seeing this drawback to the miracle of psychic power, Kevata, I feel horrified, humiliated, and disgusted with the miracle of psychic powers. And the second one is the miracle of telepathy, Adesana Patihare. And what is the miracle of telepathy? There is the case where a monk reads the mind, the mental events, the thoughts and pondering of the other beings, other individuals, saying, such is your thinking. Here is where your thinking is. Thus is your mind. So this is by adesa, you know, we understand the word. It's like a substitute in something. What do you substitute? You substitute, let's say, compassion. If someone wants to check whether this person has got compassion, you substitute compassion and see whether this person has compassion. So this is not that hard. If you have a high concentration, you can do that. And then you see whether this person has such and such a quality, or you see some sort of a defilement in his mind that it is actually not leading to that compassion. That state can be seen.
Is it something like reading others' minds or something like
that? Well, that's different. The reading mind is coming later on. It is actually seeing that that you have that the lustful thoughts, and then you will see that this person is in this state of lustful thought, and in the lustful mind as lustful mind, and the deluded mind as deluded mind. All that chittanupassana part, that each state can be seen, that this is little bit different. This is actually you substitute something, and then you get the output whether this is there. Then someone who has faith and conviction in him sees him reading the minds of other beings. He reports this to someone who has no faith and no conviction, telling him, isn't it awesome, isn't it astounding, how great the powers of this contemplative. Just now I saw him reading the minds of other beings. Then the person without faith, without conviction, would say to the person with faith and with conviction, sir, there is a charm called Manika charm, by which the monk read the minds of other beings. What do you think, Evatta? Isn't that what the man without faith, without conviction would say to the man with faith and with conviction? Yes, Lord, that is just what he would say. Seeing this drawback to the miracle of telepathy, Kevatta, I feel horrified, humiliated and disgusted with the miracle of telepathy. And the third one is the miracle of instruction, Anusasana, Patihari. This is what Buddha used. And what is the miracle of instruction? There is the case where a monk gives instruction in this way. Direct your thought in this way. Don't direct in that way. Attend to things in this way. Don't attend to them in that. Let go of this. Enter and remain in that. This Kevatta is called the miracle of instructions. If you think about the Sevitabha, Sevitabha Sutta, Buddha is actually instructing, go for moral ones, do not go for immoral ones, like that. Furthermore, there is a case where Tathagata appears in the world, worthy and rightly self-awakened. He teaches the Dhamma, admirable in its beginning, admirable in its middle, admirable in its end. He proclaims the holy life, both in its particulars and its in essence, entirely perfect, surpassingly few. So this Dhamma is lovely in the beginning, in the sense that you read first, you know, a discourse, then you can see, you get a bit of it, maybe a couple of paragraphs, it's lovely. And then you go on, and then you can see the middle part is, and again the end one later on. So it's always lovely. A householder's son, hearing the Dhamma, gains conviction in the Tathagata and reflects household life is confining, a dusty path. The life gone forth is like the open air. It is not easy living at home to practice the holy life, totally perfect, totally pure, like a polished shell. What if I were to shave off my hair and beard, put on watch robe and go forth from the household life into homeless? So after some time, he abandons his mass of wealth, large or small, leaves his circle of relatives, large or small, shaves off his hair and beard, put on the watch robe, and goes forth from the household life into homelessness. When he has thus gone forth, he lives restrained by the rules of the monastic code. Seeing danger in the slightest faults, consummating his virtue, he guards the doors of his senses. He is possessed of mindfulness and alertness and is content. The lesser section on virtue. And how is a monk consummating in virtue? Abandoning the taking of life, he abstains from taking of life. He dwells with his rod laid down, his knife laid down. Scrupulous, merciful, compassionate for the welfare of all living beings. This is part of his virtue. So, he is not going to kill anyone, and the rod laid down, no knife or anything sort of thing. Abandoning the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given. He takes only what is given, accepts only what is given, lives not by stealth, but by means of a self that has become pure. This too is part of his virtue. So, you can see that he's not stealing. The stealing is something due to the lust, the lobe. And then the killing is something to do with this ill will, the dosa, the hatred. And abandoning uncelibacy, he lives in celibate life. That's brahmachari, aloof, refrain from the sexual act. That is the villager's way. This too is part of his virtue. Abandoning false speech, he abstains from false speech. He speaks the truth, holds to the truth, is firm, reliable, no deceiver of the world. This too is part of his virtue. So why do we lie? We normally lie because of lobha, greed. Greed leads to false speech. And we will get back to that diagram in a little while. Abandoning divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech. What he has heard here does not tell they are to break those people apart from those people here, these people here. What he has heard there, he does not tell you to break these people apart from those people here. Thus reconciling those who have broken apart, or cementing those who are united, he loves concord, delights in concord, enjoys concord, speaks things that create concord. This too is part of his virtue. If we look at that diagram, you can see that in between that, that this diagram explained that the four nutriments, you know, the edible food, kabalikara ahara, and then the contact, and the mental volition, and the consciousness as the fourth. So those are the four nutriments. Depending on these four nutriments, you can see it goes down to cling to sensual desire, the flood of sensual desire, the barb of lust is again presented in short form. There are 10 paths in each of these lines going down. In between clinging to sensual desire and the flood of sensual desire, there is something called covetousness, abhijja, which I have not written down over there, but that line 1 is actually starting with the abhijja, covetousness. When we do have covetousness, now later on you can see that covetousness will turn into, because of covetousness we get the ill will as well. Because I like certain things and if I'm not getting them, then I get this ill will, anger, coming through the path of this virtue and duty clinging. So you can see the contact as nutriment, we get the virtue and duty clinging. So I hold the future. We'll talk about four important things over here. That is, because of the ill will I get envy, isha, and then there is this derogation or makkha that is appearing between the third column and the fourth column. That derogation is that we are taking away something from a person. It's like that I am working in office that I got a my friend got the job, I didn't get the job, and I am jealous about it. So having become jealous about it, now it leads to this derogation or makkah, and I would tell to other people that this person is not qualified, that I am the one qualified. Why I am telling that I am the one qualified? Because I practice similar things. Otherwise I can't say I got the same kind of degree or something, right? And I'm saying I am better. I'm disparaging others as well. So it's going to falaso as well. To do this one, what do? I will go and tell other people this person is not qualified. So I'm taking out something from him by I'm trying to do that one. To do that one, I have to lie. The moment I say this person is not qualified, I am the one qualified, that means I am making an accusation and I am lying. So you can see it came from straight away from avijja, the covetousness. And in the second case where we actually say abusive speech, for example, again I'm clinging to something, maybe the same job, and I'm accusing other person. I may be saying very rough words for that person. So you can see I'm actually going through the second column where the contact has nutriment, and then I am actually using the third column, the mental volition. I'm claiming this is mine, you know, because of my envy. So I am actually saying, why did he get it? I should get it. So I'm saying this is mine. So as soon as I said it's mine, I'm going through the third column where the mental volition as a nutriment, and I'm thoroughly holding to that, clinging to that, and then I'm making false word. Even this word, this paraballa type thing, is occurring from that, because of this, you know, there's some I'm holding certain things, and now I don't have it anymore. And the third one, that's this divisive speech. This is a bit complicated. It's very complicated. So if you look at the Buddha's description over here, Buddha is saying that the divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech, that he is not going to tell to break other people, apart other people, right? In this example of this working environment, you can see the other two people may be actually friends, that I am going to break the other person from that one. Or maybe I am friendly with someone, and there's another person who is a friend of that my friend. And I don't like that person. I don't want him to be a friend of my friend. So I want to break these two apart. So I will go and tell him, you know, the bad things, you know, about this person. I will look for some characteristics in his body or behavior or speech that I do not like, and try to induce that wrong characteristic to the other friend so that they become a part. So far this is good, but you can see the explanation is good, but you can see this is coming from two parts here, isn't it? That basically you should see there is something I like and there is something I don't like. I like my friend, I want him to be mine, and there is the other one, I don't like him, right? So you can see there is this, the like part is covetousness, coming from my covetousness. And there is this ill will regarding the third person. And therefore I am trying to separate. That's my idea. So if you apply this one, you can see the bullying and harassment is also occurring in the same way, that when they do bullying, that other person doesn't mean that he hasn't got entirely anything that I like. He got something I like, but there may be something, maybe his teeth or something that I don't like. So I want to separate that person. So I'm trying to split that person itself into two. Not this time it's not two people. Right? The same person. There is a characteristics I like, and there is a characteristic that I do not like. within that person. Now, so you can see there are two parts over here. Coming, where is coming from? It's coming from the edible food, the nutriment, the form. That person is the edible food, is the nutriment. So that particular form, within that form itself, there are two things. One I like, and there is something I do not like. So I'm trying to split that person into half.
Is that why sometimes that we try to change people's behaviors like the way we want them to be?
Yes. That part we don't like. So we are actually suffering. You know that person, if you tell that person, you are doing much damage to that person. If you say that you are disgusting or whatever thing you think, then people some go and hang themselves as well. That's the second one. The third one is really dangerous on its own. Let's say that you are sick. You got some sort of sickness, vyadhi. There may be some sort of boil in the leg, right? You know, people with this sort of thing, they actually spell out these abusive words that about these things. The same thing. There is part that I like. There is some sort of wound that is not going to cure or something. I don't like it. So I want to get rid of that one. So I would say abusive words about that one, this disgusting thing. So you can see it's applying to yourself and you are upset because of this thing. That is most harmful because it's inflicting self. And so it's not going to go. The friends are the case you don't see, but over here you see.
And the foot is also not self, isn't it? This foot is not self. It's anatta.
Well, if you understand that way, then you don't produce this, do these abusive words. But since you are actually regarding this foot as mine, and there is something I don't like, I want to get out of it. So I'm actually saying, you know, these people who got this suffering nature in the hospitals and all sorts of things, they are saying all sort of words just because they want to get rid of it. So you can see it's applying to internal. And by the time of death, what do you think? The whole body is of that nature, right?
Aversion.
Yeah. That thinking is coming. And so they are angry. And with the old age, you can see people are angry because that this part is aching, this part is aching, and so on. So actually, the Samkhya Mahabrahma helped me understand this part, what I was actually talking about. So the abandoning abusive speech, he abstains from abusive speech. He speaks words that are soothing to the ear, that are affectionate, that go to the heart, that are polite, appealing and pleasing to peoples at large. This too is part of his virtue. Abandoning idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. He speaks in season, speaks what is factual, what is in accordance with the goal, the Dhamma and the Vinaya. He speaks words worth treasuring, seasonable, reasonable, circumcised, connected with the goal. This too is part of his virtue. So what we have seen so far is that the, you know, abstaining from killing, stealing and the sexual conduct altogether, and then the four things that we do from words, that is this lying, harsh speech, frivolous talks and slander. Those are the four things. The fourth one itself is really bad because it involves that the fourth part over here as well, and the delusion, moha, is there. This has happened to us and continue to happen. It's that someone who is ignorant within us, maybe we ourselves at that time, we are saying, looking at certain things, we are saying of that maybe a person's body and a part of the person's body. You know, one would be actually talking about that person's body, and this is such and such and so and so. a person who is actually not thought about, maybe a young boy who was not thinking about these things before, he might have done it in the last birth, but in this birth, in young age, he did not have that thought about this part of the body. And because that person is talking about, then he tend to look at it or think about it. So then he become defiled by thinking. He's trying to see those characteristics the other person described. And you can see it lead to the sensual desire, sexual misconduct and all those things. So the idle chatter go long way. It produces this kamesumichachara, that is that sensual, going for the sensual pleasure, not allowed. And it's massive in its way.
That's because one cannot control the six senses, isn't it?
Yes, we are coming back to that one later on, that connecting what I was telling this one, there's a Kundali Sutta, that probably we can look at that Kundali Sutta, and, because you mentioned it. You see now, self-restraint, how the self-restraint lead to this speech thing. I'm taking only a part of this Kundali Sutta, which appear in the Bhujanga Sanyukta. And this Kundali went and asked Buddha, you know, for what benefit that Buddha is actually having this life. So it says the Kundali Tathagata lives for the benefit and fruit of true knowledge and liberation. And Buddha went on that one by one, that is the seven factors of enlightenment is the one actually leading to that one, because Kundali asking other questions. And it went to the, Buddha said the three kind of good conduct Kundali, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the four establishment of mindfulness. And then he asked the question, Master Gautama, what things when developed and cultivated fulfill the three kinds of good conduct? Restraint of the sense faculties, Kundali, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the three kinds of good conduct. What we were talking about a little while ago are the part of the three kinds of good conduct. And so Buddha said the restrained sense faculties. And then Buddha explained, and how Kundali is restraint of sense faculties developed and cultivated so that it fulfills the three kinds of good conduct. Here Kundali, having seen an agreeable form with the eye, a bhikkhu does not long for it. This is this covetousness, abhijja. Or become excited by it, or generate lust for it. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. But having seen a disagreeable form with the eye, he is not dismayed by it, not daunted. If you see a disagreeable word, is not dismayed, is actually makko. That in the diagram you can see there's makko derogation written. If you see that one, you don't have this characteristic. That means I see that the other person got the job, I'm not having this derogation, I will take it away from him. And the first one, Buddha said, is the abhijja, covetousness. Because of this not restraining the senses, you get covetousness. Because of covetousness, you get the other things, you know. For example, I would steal certain things. And that sort of thing would happen if I have covetousness. And if I have the anger, then I will go killing and abusive words and so on. So you can see the link between to this diagram. Buddha is telling over here in a very short, you know, there's no explanation, but it's lengthy. So you can see the connection between that one. So if he's not doing that one, then his mind become inwardly composed, well liberated. Because if I do not hear that person got the promotion, if I'm not thinking that it is mine, no problem, isn't it? Everybody gets jobs and so on, so why do I care? So
I have a question now. You know, you mentioned about abhijja and vyapada.
Yeah.
Covetousness and evil.
Yeah.
How about michchaditti, that is wrong view?
Yes. Yes, the wrong view is the one that is done by the mind. I didn't come up to this one. So Buddha is explaining that one is from the doing it by the mind. So from the mind there are three things. That, yeah. Yeah, so we get the wrong view from the mind. That is the biggest one. Because of the wrong view, I would actually think that job is mine. If I don't have it, there's no push. Because of the view that we have this thinking, although I may not even want to think, maybe I am angry, but I don't want to go on thinking in this angry way because I know I feel bad myself. But I can't stop it because my view is actually telling, yeah, it is okay, it is yours, it is yours. So I keep on going it that way. So
it's the wrong view that leads to I making and my making. So.
Yes, yes. View is the one actually doing that one. The clinging pushes you to that one, to think about this one. And then because you have adopted that view before, that this is mine, let's say I used to eat something, and now I have diabetes, but I can't eat that one. But I used to eat that one because of my view, it is pushing me to go in that use. Because of the wrong view, there is this, the wrong thought. So I have this sensual desire thinking, ill will thinking, the cruelty thinking all coming up because of that one. So when I have those three, then I am done. I am going in this path leading to the lust, and one is going to the hatred and the other one is going to the delusion.
So is it because wrong view that covetousness and ill will
comes from? Yeah, that is the stemming, that is the point that it is coming from. When one of them occur, all the other ones will occur, because that if I get the wrong view, I get the covetousness. If I get covetousness, then I will go and lie. You know, my tendency is there for me to lie. Tendency is there for me to have, misconduct, sexual misconduct and so on. And I will get the ill will. As this diagram explained, you can see you get the ill will. Definitely you get the ill will. Because I hold the future and the future changes. Whenever I have the covetousness, that let's say I'm eating something good, and this is good, then I hold for the future, let me have it for tomorrow. And, or maybe that it is my family, I'm having, you know, my wife is good, children are good, my car is good and house is good, I got a job and everything is fine, and all of a sudden something will pop up, a tsunami comes in, or the earthquakes, or I lose my job or something like that one, and then I'm angry, I hold this one, I work for this one, that this is mine and it's gone, and then the ill will comes from that. So this is the connection between that sense restraint, not restraining, and having these things. So he abstained from damaging seeds and plants' life. He eats only once a day, refraining from the evening meal and from food at the wrong time of day. He abstains from dancing, singing, instrumental music, and from watching shows. He abstains from wearing garlands and from beautifying himself with scents and cosmetics. He abstains from high and luxurious beds and seats. He abstains from accepting gold and money. He abstains from accepting uncooked grain, raw meat, women and girls, male and female slaves, goat and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, steeds, that's horse, and mares, fields and property. He abstains from running messages, from buying and selling, from dealing with false scales, false metals, false measures, from bribery, deception and fraud. So this running messages is that it may be a monk who is going to the mother, father, and father may be telling that, you know, my mother has left me and please go and tell, you know, her, ask her to come over here or something. So that sort of thing also included here.
Why doesn't the
accepting or non-accepting raw meat and uncooked...
They are not allowed to store those things.
What's the reason for them?
Well, you have the greediness when you have those things. Then you can cook whatever time you want and prepare. And you are thinking, I'm meditating, there is this thing, I can go and actually cook and I can eat. So you stop your meditation as well. Yeah.
That's why we can't do meditation as well. Because we have all sort of things to do at once.
Well, if you contemplate about this foulness of the food, then you can. You know, see, Buddha is asking us to mix food before eat. If you have done that meditation, when you mix, you can see how disgusting the thing that you actually mixed. And therefore, you eat only just to, you know.
Dhamma can be explained in many ways.
Yes. So, he abstained from... depriving of limbs, executing, imprisoning, highway robbery, plunder and violence. This too is part of his virtue. The intermediate section on virtue. Where some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to damaging seed and plant life such as these, plants propagated from roots, stems, joints, buddings and seeds, he abstained from damaging seed and plant life such as this. This too is part of his virtue. So this is the way he lives. He is
plants and any reason for that plant?
Why
destroying plants?
Well, remember that there were things that monk was actually cutting down these trees to construct, the Aramu type of thing, and then there was a deity, the tree deity in that one living. So since they respect monks, they did not harm, and one actually damaged a son or someone who was actually there as well. So that sort of thing. And if you were a monk, has no they were food sort of thing are given, shelter is sort of given, right? So why go and damage things?
So for a layman, removing a plant that has come from a seed, is it a
Well, no, that's a different. That's in sense, for so you are not bounded by that monastic rule. Mm-hmm. The monks are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So monks are bound by that, but not the lay disciples. Yeah. But if you are also destroying things unnecessarily, let's say there's a forest, then you have put a fire onto that one sort of thing, and then you are damaging plants' life and. You know that the living creatures are there as well. When you are actually taking, if you are burning a tree, for example, there are living creatures as well.
What about these little plants that pops up in the spring, the ones that you do all the year?
Weeds type thing.
Weeds, yeah.
Yeah. You can take it out. There's no problem for a person. But you have to be careful doing that one, whether you are damaging animals, you know, living creatures by that one. You know, by the time you actually put your tools under the ground, there may be worms.
Yeah, of course, there is intention. Intention plays a role there.
Yeah.
If your intention is to clean the place, then that is something good. It's a bad. The moment you get bad intention,
yeah,
you need
from. Yeah, it is. But although you have good intentions, you have to be careful as well.
Yeah.
And again, this is for monks, isn't it? Because if you are going to become a monk, that means you don't want all these other things because your main purpose is to aim for Nibbana, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And if you are aiming for Nibbana, what's the point of you are going to cut a tree or the things? That's not necessary because it's inside there's some sort of a clinging in it, isn't it? To do something.
Yeah, there's a desire and those things. And then you are neglecting on the wisdom.
So can you remember that there's a verse in Dhammapada, Buddha says, do not cut trees or grass, but cut the roots of defilements.
That's right.
Yes. So, whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith, you see, the Buddha is using this word over here. Contemplatives living off food given in faith. They can't do that. So, you are not living from food given on faith, right? So, there's a qualifying word over here. And are addicted to consuming stored up goods such as these, stored up food, stored up drinks, stored up clothing, stored up vehicles, stored up bedding, stored up sense, stored up meat. He abstained from consuming stored up goods such as these. This too is part of his virtue. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to watching shows such as these, dancing, singing. This is the Visukadasanamala in this thing in Pali. Instrument, musical, plays, recitation, hand clapping, magic, lantern scenes, all sort of those things, he abstained from those ones. Whereas some priests and contemporary living off food given in faith are addicted to heedless and idle games such as these, 8-row chess, 10-row chess, chess in the air, hopscotch, and spelican, dice, stick games. So, you know, there are so many games, you know, even we do not know certain games over here. And they abstain from those things. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to high and luxurious furnishing, such as these oversized couches adorned with carved animals, long-haired coverlets, multicolored patchwork coverlets, white wooden coverlets, and so on. So they are abstained from these things. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to sense, cosmetics, and means of beautification such as these, rubbing powders into the body, massaging with oils, bathing in perfumed water, needling the limbs, using mirrors, ointments, garlands, scents, creams, face powder, mascara, bracelets, headbands, and so on. So, he avoids those things as well. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to talking about lowly topics such as these, talking about kings, robbers, ministers of state, armies, alarms, battles, and so on. So, clothing, furniture, garlands, all sort of thing. And that list actually, in the sense that include what I was actually describing, a part of a body describing and talking about those things. When you talk about the king, what do you talk about the king? His rulership, or, you know, those things are also included. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to debates such as these. You understand this doctrine and this discipline. I am the one who understands this doctrine and discipline. So they are arguing each other. I am the one who understands. You don't, you know. So that's the view. You know, you get the view, and because of the view they fight and go into the ill will. And so that sort of things has to be avoided. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith are addicted to running messages and errands for people such as these, king, ministers of state, noble warriors, priests, and so on. Go here, they say, go here, go there, take this there, fetch that here. He abstained from running messages and errands for people such as these. This too is part of his virtue. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith engage in skimming, that is planning, persuading, hinting, belittling, that means that that's to speak of someone as unimportant, you know, in the society that happened, this person is useless and sort of thing, yeah, they are not doing that one. Pursuing gain with gain, he abstained from forms of skimming and persuading such as this. This too is part of his virtue. Actually, although this list is so long, if you read carefully, right, And when you go to meditation next day, you can see your mind is so balanced. This virtue path, you read it and admire them. So it's how beautiful they are, how good they are, these things. And you don't need much meditation to actually arrive at the higher concentration. You are there. This virtue is really important. You see, you can see the moment you admire this virtue, you are admiring, not coming from this wrong path. You see that this virtue is on the fourth line over here, beyond the fourth line, right? And all these things are leading to that. So the bad ones, like this, the makkha, derogation, and then the ill will, isha, envy, all those things, abhijja, covetousness, I don't want them. This virtue part is the result. This virtue part over here is the result of not having these things. The moment you admire the virtue, you admire not having these. When you admire not having these, your mind becomes so balanced because you are not going to bad states. You admire not going to those bad states.
So that means in meditation, you just see whether you have done these things, and if you haven't, that you.
That's a purification.
Yeah.
This one is actually you. You have a role model. Your role modeling include a person who is having this virtue, like Buddha, an arahant, right? Now, when you actually have that, you set your mind that is good, then it become your right view. Because it's your right view, you would like your mind to be like that. So I don't want to go into ill will. This is what I'm saying. If you see someone attaining Nirodha Samapatti, cessation of feeling and perception, which I saw in that Akhanita Brahma realm, you can see immediately you saw a role model. There he has ceased his feeling and perception, the hardest thing to achieve. So it becomes the role model, and then you admire that one. So this is the beauty of seeing arahants. When you see those qualities. When you see those qualities, you feel like, well, I am one. I am one for, going for that way and sort of not have those things. So admiring the quality is one thing. What you are asking is, then you check whether I have those qualities. And you can see most of these qualities are not there with us, the householder, right? But you have certain things like this, refrain from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, and refrain from lying. And if you can have the other three, it's really good. Refrain from harsh speech, frivolous talks, and slander. They pay you so much. You may be in office, your mind is so silent. So silent in the sense that remember that Buddha said to monks that when they are together, they should have the either second jhana, right? That is the arahant silence, or they discuss Dhamma. What we were discussing about that office environment and so on, they are from this abhijja, covetousness and the ill will, what it generates is this initial application and sustained application, vitakka vichara, right? This initial application, that person is not good, going there, that means vitakka. And then you examine him, around him, is he good? No, he's not good, I'm finding faults with that one. So vichara, what are they? They are vachisankara, although you did not even express to somebody else, it is there within you. Are in silence mean I don't want that one. That means I don't want vitakka vichara, I don't want initial application or sustained application. What is that? That is second jhana. So that is the other way around.
Is that the same thing that you mentioned in the last Saturday or something? That this vijnana is talking or something like that? Vijnana
given an input to yourself. It talks itself. You give something and you can talk, you can see what is coming out of it.
Even though sometimes when, for an example, the office situation, when you see something or something happens, even though you haven't put the words out, within your mind that you have said everything.
It is.
And then you plan that this is what I say.
Yes, right.
Isn't it?
It is. And then if there is an opportunity, if somebody is asking,
you would just say,
you will flush it out and tell it.
Prepared.
Yes, it's done before. You have calculated all those things to say.
So the bad karma already happened. Is it a part of the karma is done?
Well, the one that is done from the mind is done. By speech, you haven't. Because you did not produce the speech, you know, it didn't come out of that thing. By the time it come out, it has done as well. And then the harming is, you know, when the other person...
Half of the harm is there.
Is there, yes.
Well, when you said second jhana is dead, isn't there the sustained application?
No, in the second jhana you ceases that one. The first jhana concentration, you have the initial application and sustained application, right? And the second jhana concentration, you don't have the initial application, sustained application. So you are without those thinking and pondering about this, you don't produce these speeches, right? So when you normally you are producing bad speeches, and in the second jhana, so there's the silence over there. Oh, else Buddha said, have the Dhamma discussion. That's the only thing you can do. When you actually talk about Dhamma, you are not talking about these bad things. You are going always for good things. So you are refraining from the bad speech and you have the moral things being discussed. There is this great section on virtue where as some priests and...
Is it proper to say when we are bombarded with thoughts? To accept that situation as it is.
That it is happening to you? You should observe that this is happening to me and I am affected by that one. And if it is a bad thing, then it leads to this suffering. That's why I am going to end. So therefore it would be fitting for me to remove it. Not to do this one. So therefore he is actually putting effort to get rid of these wrong speeches, wrong things. Yeah. And then he's mindful, he can get rid of that one. Yeah. So the view, the effort and the mindfulness circling around in that particular point and going out of it.
View and effort.
Yeah, right view, right effort, right mindfulness. It's in the Mahachattarika Sutra, the great 40 discourse of the middle length saying. Mahachattarika Sutra, yeah. So the great section on virtue, whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith maintain themselves by wrong livelihood by such lowly arts as reading marks on the limbs. You know that... reading hands and all those things, yeah. Reading omen, that is telling future and signs. Interpreting celestial events, that is falling stars, comets, this time this will happen and so on. Interpreting dreams and reading marks of the body, that is this the study of and shape of the skull to reveal the character. Reading a skull, he can say that this person is such and such, right? And reading marks on cloth, known by mice. Offering fire oblation, so you know there are offering of fire to the sun god and all those things are there. And they offer certain things and rice powder, rice grains, ghee, oil and so on.
Because one would do all these things because one would cling to oneself, isn't it?
Yes. to for my existence.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. For my existence, I will do anything. That's what it is. Yeah? And making predictions based on the fingertips, geomancy, that is that fortune telling, using lines and figures, laying demons in a cemetery, placing spells on spirits, reciting house protection charms, snake charming, poison law, and scorpion law, and so on. Fortune telling based on visions, giving protective charms, interpreting the calls of birds and animals. You know that when birds are sort of singing, and in Sri Lankans I know some people like will say the bird is telling something, right?
Reciting house protection charms.
Yeah.
Is it pirith?
It's not pirith. It is that charms. Pirith is actually Dhamma.
Mm.
So there's no thing about that. Here.
So sorry. So when this yantras are made with pirith, so isn't that a
No, they are not. They use Buddha's words and sort of things to those things, but they are not pirith. They are not counted as Buddha's things. They are done by some other people, right? So don't.
And again, the aim is different, isn't it?
That's right.
The Buddha's Dhamma, the sutras or whatever, that aims for the Nibbana. But the other yantra mantra or whatever the other things.
Yeah, throw away the other. Yeah.
You are looking for something good happen to you in the future. Mm.
Well, they are saying, separate this demon from me so that I can live happily, although I have done something to that person before, right?
So is it okay for lay people then to use...
charms?
Yes.
No. You are not supposed to do that, only even you are a lay person.
Then it goes to Mithyadrishti.
Yeah, wrong
but
use.
This happened about in Sri Lanka, doesn't it?
It is, yes. So he abstains from wrong livelihood, from lowly arts such as this. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith maintain themselves by wrong livelihood, by such lowly arts as determining lucky, unlucky gems, garments, staff, and swords, spears, arrows, all those things. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith maintain themselves by wrong livelihood by such lowly arts as forecasting. The rulers will march forth. The rulers will march forth and return. I mean, this is happening in Sri Lanka even now. And though he avoids those telling those things. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith maintain themselves by wrong livelihood by such lowly arts of forecasting, there will be a lunar eclipse, there will be a solar eclipse, there will be a occultation of an asterim. The sun and moon will go their normal courses. So, and so on. So there will be earthquake, all those things. He abstained from those wrong livelihood. Whereas some priests and contemplatives living off food given in faith maintain themselves by wrong livelihood, by such lowly arts as forecasting, there will be abundant rain, so they forecast in rain as well. And he abstained from those things. There will be famine, there will be plenty and so on. And again, this calculating auspicious dates for marriages and betrothals, that is promises, the divorces for collecting debts or making investment and loans for being attractive or unattractive. So he abstained all those things. And then there you can see there's even he paralyzing some people's, you know, bind a man's tongue as well. And various kinds of arts has been used. And when you actually read these things, then you wonder whether we know any of these things, you know, that the Buddha can actually say all these things, and how much of that one we know, even those kind of bad arts we hear time to time. And then promising gifts to devas in return for favors, fulfilling such promises, demonology and teaching house protection spells, inducing virility and impotence. And then, you know, there are some medicinal things as well that making someone vomit and, you know, that cleaning the stomach, all those medicinal things. He abstained from that kind of living. A monk thus consummate in virtue sees no danger anywhere from his restraint through virtue, just as a head anointed noble warrior, king, who has defeated his enemies, sees no danger anywhere from his enemies. In the same way, the monk thus consummate in virtue sees no danger anywhere from his restraint through virtue. Endowed with this noble aggregate of virtue, he is inwardly sensitive to the pleasure of being blamelessness. Anavachya sukham pat samvedi. This is how monk is consummating virtue. And we will go for a couple of other paragraphs and then stop. And how does a monk, this the sense restraint, how does a monk guard the doors of his senses? On seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the eye, evil unskilled qualities such as greed or distress might assail him. Abhijja dhumanas. That's what it is. So again, back to that diagram. On hearing sounds with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching the tactile sensation with the body, on cognizing an idea with the mind, he does not grasp at any theme or detail by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the mind, evil unskillful qualities such as greed or distress might assail him. Endowed with this noble restraint over the sense faculties, he is inwardly sensitive to the pleasure of being blameless. This is how monk guard the doors of his senses. Remember that Kundali Sutta that what we discuss will apply over here. And because of this restraint, then he won't get the wrong speech and all those things. I'll tell you, by the time you don't have wrong speech, you are really happy. Wrong, you know, the if you have the right speech, you're so happy. Look at this, the Eightfold Path, the right view. So you get the right view that normally people are thinking about this, there's no suffering and happiness over here. But you see suffering and all those things, this is the suffering and this is the cause of suffering, this is cessation of suffering, and this is the path leading to cessation of suffering. And because of that one, you get this, the right thought, that is the thought of renunciation, thought of non-malevolence and thought of non-harming. So you are going in the good path. So these three paths now go split into right speech. If I have the sensual desire thinking, for example, kama vitakka, then I would go for this sexual misconduct type thing. I would go for stealing. If I have the ill will, then I will go for harsh speech, and I have rough word, and then I try to split two people, or split my part of my body even. And if I have the harming, thought of harming, then I have this, I'm leading to delusion, so I have frivolous talk. So you can see immediately that these three producing bad things. And if you are not doing that one, if I have right view, and then I have the right thought, thought of renunciation, thought of non-harming, thought of non-malevolence, then I'm refraining those things. Therefore that, you know, it's like a pyramid where you have the right view as the corner, and in the middle there is three things. And then the bottom in the pyramid, four corners, are those refraining from those paths. So your cone normally is open, the upward.
So the bottom corners are the steep.
Well, in the case of bad one, if you get the nicha, that the wrong view, then you have the wrong thought, and then the bad ones are the lying, harsh speech, frivolous talk and slander. But if you are not doing that one, then your cone is the other way around. It's the pyramid on the other side, that you are not inside this pyramid. You are outside, so you are refraining from all those things, and you have the enlarged mind.
In the middle, there's one dot, and other dots are above,
other below. Above. Yes, yeah, yeah.
So that means it's like kusala and akusala.
That's right. Yeah.
Kusala is what you mentioned just now.
Yeah.
Non-harmless, non-malevolence, and
thought of non-harming.
And renunciation.
That's right. Yeah. So that
three.
That three actually is going to now four bad conduct by the speech. Yeah. Yeah, wrong speech. So wrong speech is actually now making the pyramid, the base of the pyramid. So if you go out of that one, that world is so vast, so beautiful. And if you read this 106th discourse, this Ananja Sappaya Sutta in the 106th discourse in the middle and saying, and that's what Buddha is saying, that this sensual desire is Mara's thing and it's impermanent. And so one would go beyond that one, and then I don't want to be in this pyramid, in the sense, that's what it in a sense it says. So let me have the expanded mind. So he's going for the other side of the world. What are the other side of the world in the other pyramid? Is actually the factors of enlightenment, this Satis Bodhipakshika Dhamma, and you delighting on that. Those things. And so I think probably we will, because we are going beyond the time, we will stop for today, and we will start the rest of the discussion next week.